She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And that little reminder, we don't tell you what to think, but we really want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. Our show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson. And just a little note, because it's so germane to today's show, I'm driving a clean-burning Jetta TDI from Chapman. And on my last road trip, I got about 48 miles per gallon. It is very clean-burning. Makes me quite happy, and it is a perfect segue to announce our guest for this next hour. Her name is Kelly King, and she is the Vice President of Pacific Biodiesel, and they are a leading pioneer and advocate for the establishment of community-based biodiesel. I encourage you, even while you're listening to this broadcast, you can listen and go on their website. It's www.biodiesel.com. And I just have to say, Kelly, welcome. And your website is one of the most comprehensible and understandable explanations about biodiesel, what it is, what it's not, and also about the impressive history of the company. It was very easy to do my homework just going by your website. And of course, I looked at other things, but thank you so much for that unbelievably great content.
Thank you very much. I've got a big smile on my face right now. Thank you for having me here, and aloha to all your listeners.
I know. Oh, that makes me want to just press pause and get on the plane. I just think that if I die and go to heaven, I will live somewhere on Maui or somewhere on one of the islands. It's like you just get there, and it's I've been blessed enough to go twice, and I cannot wait to come back. And really looking at what you do, just come back and build more relationships for Mrs. Green. So, but the show is not all about me. It's all about you. And I just want to remind our listeners to be here live every Saturday at 12 at MrsGreensWorld.com. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid. And I know some people are because they sent me text today. I'll be listening. And all of the podcasts of my shows are available on the website for your listening pleasure. That's MrsGreensWorld.com. And a great way to stay in touch is Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, because you'll find out lots of interesting things like what we're going to talk about today. And Kelly, I think it's always good for our listeners to start at the beginning. You're clearly, you and your husband Bob, clearly pioneers since you started in 1996, Pacific Biodiesel. You're an advocate for the establishment of community-based biodiesel. So tell us a little bit about how you got started, and even start with what is biodiesel. I think that'd be a great place to inform our listeners and me.
Okay. Well, great. Yes, it's a great story. I think my husband has been a diesel mechanic most of his life, and our first business was called King Diesel. It was the Cummins engine dealership for Maui County. So he did sales, maintenance, and repair on diesel engines and generators. And one of the big contracts he had was with the County of Maui at the Central Maui Landfill, the generator that ran a lot of the equipment down there. So he would go down there to do regular maintenance on that generator, and started to hear the complaints about the fats, oils, and greases, which we call fog, being dumped into the landfill, because they would cause spontaneous fires, for one thing, which are dangerous in themselves. The other thing that happens with that kind of grease, and it's still happening in landfills throughout the nation, is people will, you know, you're not allowed to put liquids usually into the landfill, but people will solidify their fat, you know, at home in a
right.
in a jar,
and dump
we used to use orange juice cans, and then dump it in the trash. And when it goes into the landfill, with all that heat and energy in the landfill, it melts. It starts oozing, and it can eat right through the liners of landfills, and go into, you know, eventually be a source of poisoning for groundwater. So it's a health issue, it's a safety issue, and, you know, he was hearing all these issues when he would be down there. started looking into the idea of what to do with that waste oil. And because of his early history as a diesel mechanic on the West Coast, he remembered during the 70s that truck driving companies would be told, they would tell their truck drivers to, if you run out of fuel, back then you would drive to a gas station sometimes and they'd be out of fuel by the time you got to the front of the line.
Right,
and
I remember that.
So the truck drivers were being told, if they run out of diesel and you can't get diesel, go to the nearest grocery store and put some Wesson oil in your tank.
Oh my gosh.
It'll get you to the next stop. And so, knowing that this was in the background of the trucking industry, Bob started looking into what if we could use this waste cooking oil, and partnered with, he was doing research. It was around the mid-90s when the Internet superhighway was just getting going. He became an Internet junkie. I mean, it was just fascinating. There weren't even pictures on the Internet back then.
It's unbelievable to think about it, especially to where we are now. I mean, it's talk about pioneers. You're right. You were the light bearers.
Yeah, and so he was just so fascinated that he could get on the Internet and find information from all over the world that he would, stay up till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning just searching, came across the idea of biodiesel, which was happening in Europe at the time. They were using mostly crop oil from rapeseed. And he found some folks at University of Idaho who were doing some lab research on used cooking oil into biodiesel. So we partnered with that entity and brought one of the researchers over, and Bob actually built the first biodiesel plant in the U.S. that was running on used cooking oil, for commercial biodiesel. But that was the beginning. It was really motivated by trying to keep the fats, oils, and greases out of the landfill and trying to recycle all of that. It turned into what we have today, which is an amazing company that has bases in Oregon and Texas as well. But always keeping that idea of community base as our model, being able to look at local resources, local production, and local distribution.
And there's so much in that sentence, because I do use the word closed loop a lot on my show, and this is absolutely a closed loop concept that you're talking about. But let's go back a little bit to when you talk about, feedstock. Tell people what that is, because I didn't understand it. I had a concept of what it was, but you operate scalable multi-feedstock biodiesel plants. So what is feedstock? It's the simplest way to ask.
Feedstock is what goes into the plant to make biodiesel from. And I'll talk just a couple minutes too about biodiesel, because there is a lot of confusion out there. And contrary to what the advertisement about this show was talking about, we're really not talking about home brewed biodiesel.
It's not putting French fry oil in your, cleaning it up and putting your car. It's so much more sophisticated.
Right. And that, that works for some very, very old cars to put the cooking oil that's been lightly filtered directly into the car, but it doesn't work for any kind of modern vehicles that were built in the 90s and beyond, and more recent.
Right.
The engine has become, the diesel engine has become much more sophisticated, and it doesn't work to just put used cooking oil directly into your tank. The other thing is different between actual home brewed biodiesel, which is processed, which can be processed fashion as commercial biodiesel, is it generally is not tested. And
right.
The U.S. now has a standard for biodiesel. It has to meet a whole litany of tests for components like sulfur and particulate matter. And a lot of them are pollutant components, and some of them are performance components. And so the standard is called ASTM, which stands for American Society of Testing and Materials, D6751. And all commercial biodiesel that's sold on the market has to meet that standard in order to guarantee that it will work in a vehicle, that it will meet the emission standards, and that it will perform as it's supposed to.
And the caution that I want to give to our listeners and to anybody that is out there wondering about what they can do, if you have a warranty on your car and you start messing around and don't use something that is in compliance with the standards, it can void out your warranty. So it's really something that I would never even consider. It's so beyond my, you know, my skill set. But for people that do know what they're doing, be really careful. Even if you have
right, and you know that is one of the chances you take. Although you know, if you are willing to take that chance, and we try not to discourage people who want to do this on their own, as long as they're safe about it.
Right,
because
they have to really know what they're doing.
A component, yeah, it does involve a methanol component, which is a flammable component. But that if you are going to make your own fuel, you don't try to sell it to anybody. You know, you only use it yourself,
right,
and that
right.
way the risk is only on you, and you're willing to take that risk.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to
anyway,
break down that entrepreneurial spirit and the
right,
people that
exactly.
are just like,
I mean,
yeah, everybody do
right.
do what you can do, but for me, not so much.
Yeah, and actually, in the early days of biodiesel, the government made a very short-lived attempt to actually finger and arrest people who were making their own fuel because they were not paying that fuel tax that we all pay for driving on our public roads.
Right, right.
It was a very interesting time where you actually saw, you know, older people in handcuffs that were being taken away because they were using fuel that they were buying, you know, on what they considered the black market and not paying taxes. But back to the feedstock issue, the feedstocks that are the most efficient and the most have the highest emission reduction rating by the EPA are used cooking oil,
okay.
the commercial and whatever comes from your home, whatever's been used as because it's considered when you pick it up at the source, that's when the life cycle analysis starts. So versus you have about an 80% reduction rate for used cooking oil biodiesel versus some kind of a crop oil like soybean, which has maybe about a 25% reduction rate.
And are some of the biggest...
Because they look at the entire cycle of,
right, right.
you know, planting, growing, and everything.
And when you think about it, I'm sorry to say, but with our, you know, with our country, some of the biggest consumers of cooking oil, I'm sure, are fast food restaurants. I mean, fries and, you know, chicken nuggets and all of those things. Is that where, when you started Pacific Biodiesel, I was interested about that part. Did you work with the, you know, establish relationships with the big consumers of the cooking oil to feed the plant for the conversion?
But well, when we started, we had relationships with few pump truck companies.
Okay,
that were
okay.
already operating and picking up. They
okay.
were already picking, you know, pumping out grease traps and picking up cooking
right.
oil, and they would just dump it in the landfill. So we worked with them for many years, and until we got to the point where, you know, because they were charging for picking up used cooking oil.
Right.
And then they were charging us when they dropped it off. So we got to the point where the restaurants were saying, hey, if this is a valuable commodity, why are you charging us? So we tried to get the pump truck companies on Maui to pick it up for free, and they wouldn't. So we just brought our own, you know, we started our own pump truck company, and now we're picking up. We figure since we started in the islands picking up used cooking oil, we've probably saved collectively the restaurant industry close to $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
In fees of picking, you know, what
right.
they used to pay, because they used to pay about $1 a gallon.
Holy smokes. Up. Not to mention the benefit to the environment on all of our behalf.
Right. And we include all the restaurants that are associated with our model in a program called Restaurants for Renewables. So we try to recognize them. They're all on a website. And you can look by island. So, you know, if our dire biodiesel customers want to eat at the restaurants that are really being environmentally conscious, they could find those restaurants that are contributing to the renewable fuel economy.
Which is really important, and I think people are making wiser choices about that. I'm always harping on the eat locally, always
exactly.
look at that, but really watch and see who is giving sustainable to-go containers and on and on. Can we just talk about a little, it's a very... I'm sure it's a complicated answer, but maybe you could give us the mainstream version. One of the things that I noticed, and I'm interested because of Safe Cosmetics, you have a water-free processing technology that really does make you a leader in production flexibility. I read that. Why is not using water so important?
Well, water is a huge resource,
right,
for one thing.
Other,
you know,
than
we
that,
need it, yeah. We need it for agriculture. But as I that's really the crux of it, is that we don't want to be using extra resources that could go into growing our food, growing our even our biofuel crops, all the things that we need water for. The other thing is that using water creates more water waste, and then you have an extra resource to get rid of at the other end. So we're, you know, as we grow in size, we're also in advancing our technology to be more and more efficient. And one of the things that was difficult in the smaller scale efficiencies was doing a recycling of methanol. So we've bridged that gap now. Now we can actually build a smaller scale biodiesel plant that will recycle the methanol, and it cuts down about 60% in the usage of methanol.
Oh my gosh, that is so significant. And I want to make sure that you understand. I know one of the biggest issues as a world that we face as a planet is the water supply. So I understand that. I just wondered if there was a technological component that helped with the entire processing. And, you know, I want to say, I know there are water issues on Maui. There are water issues everywhere. I mean, we are
right
in the middle of the desert Southwest. Colorado is burning. Half of Arizona burned last year. So water, we have the conversations all the time with people. Here, it's almost free in Arizona. It's all they charge for is the delivery. There's no actual charge for the water. And people waste
wow
it. And it drives me crazy. Water is so cheap here. It's like, you know, just
wow
because it's free doesn't mean it's sustainable and renewable. We're running out, folks. So turn
right
your faucets off. Okay.
Right. And we're actually working on a project with the University of Hawaii called High Rate Anaerobic Digestion, because when we bring in the grease trap, which we're now going to be able to use with the Big Island plant, we'll be able to use trap grease oil to make biodiesel, and it'll meet all the standards. But the trap grease is about 80 to 90% water. So there's a lot of water that comes out of that when we pick it up from the restaurants. And the high-rate anaerobic digestion that we're working on, the unique thing about that is that it's, even though anaerobic digestion has been around for a long time, it's usually you see these giant, you know, tanks that run these processes, and it takes somewhere around 10 to 15 days. So this is going to speed up the process, make a much smaller footprint, and get cleaner water with less pollutants in it much faster. It's a technology that the University of Hawaii has been working on, and now they're piloting it at our Sand Island plant. And this will actually, I mean, I think we actually might even have saleable water at the end of it.
Oh my gosh.
It's going to be so pure. So we're, you know, stand by for that one.
Stand
that
by for another show from Hawaii. Maybe I'll have to do it
right
from on site and broadcast
right
live.
Absolutely.
Edging for that. So this entire process, to me, the some of the obvious things, it reduces dependency on foreign oil. It significantly reduces costs and the pollution produced by transporting fuel long distances. It cuts down
right
on the landfill waste. What are some of the, you know, talk about the green job component. To me, this is one of the things that is so sustainable, because it would be an ongoing demand, an ongoing supply, and create real jobs, not temporary
right
jobs like building a solar plant, which is great. I think that's, you know, I'm all over that. But these are jobs that, to me, are truly sustainable green jobs. What kind of impact have you seen in that since you started?
Well, you know, it's there are those construction jobs, and construction jobs of just building a plant. The Big Island biodiesel plant, I think, generated 85 construction jobs. But like you said, those are short term. The biodiesel plant itself will, at full capacity, will employ about 20 people. And then we've got the peripheral trucking jobs for the trucking
right
company that picks up the used cooking oil and the trap grease. We've also, I think the thing that's going to probably generate the most jobs is agriculture. We have so much fallow land here in the state of Hawaii, and the fear is that if we don't plant something on them, we're going to get condos and development.
Oh.
So the idea is, you know, we've got something now that we can encourage diversified ag, since our sugar and our pineapple have gone away, and, you know, coffee is having issues, and It's really hard to compete, for Hawaii to compete against a lot of these third world countries because of labor costs.
Right, right.
But because of this model of, you know, I mean, the things that Hawaii has tried to compete with in its agriculture have been exported products. Things like, you know, they're making coffee for export.
Okay, we have to take a short break, Kelly. I hate to cut you off. We'll be right back. Kelly King, the Vice President of Pacific Biodiesel, a leading pioneer and advocate for the establishment of community-based biodiesel. I know that you are going to want to stay here with me.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. I'd like to share with you a super low payment opportunity on a brand new 2012 VW Jetta S from Chapman Tucson. With $19.99 down and a 39-month lease, your payment will be $129. Go check this great new sedan out at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan in Tucson. And you better hurry. Offer ends June 30th. Be sure to tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill. But I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we are giving you lots to think about. My brain is going cattywampus. There's so many things here to learn about biodiesel and really, really important things. And when I was reading your website, we have Kelly King. She's the Vice President of Pacific Biodiesel, and they are a leading pioneer and advocate for the establishment of community-based biodiesel. When I was reading the website, I just kept coming back to the thought about the great things that you're doing on our behalf for the planet, because we are a closed loop. I try to explain that to people. Yes, it does really matter what's happening in China. And yes, it does really matter when things from the tsunami start showing up in Hawaii and on the shores in San Francisco. So I think it's just such an incredibly important topic, given the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that are caused by our cars. It's really a huge issue that we face as a planet. So Kelly, thanks to you and Bob and all your great team for what you're doing on my behalf.
Well, you're welcome. And I think that when we went to break, we were talking about green jobs.
Let's go back to that.
And so I did want to make a mention that we actually were winners of the Green Jobs Award, a National Green Jobs Award last year. And we're very happy to say that for the year 2012, we were noted by the Pacific or the Hawaii Business Magazine as one of the best places to work in Hawaii. So we really pride ourselves on on being that kind of a company. But I also want to say one of my greatest joys is being able to have a company like this that can offer these types of jobs to people who are looking for something. You know, there's so many people out there searching for something to do that's meaningful, and all of our employees, every single one of them, understands the model, understands what we're doing, understands their part of it, however, you know, maybe distant from the actual production, but everybody's a component to making this model happen.
So it's a core value of the company. It's just I ask when I interview people not to put them on the spot. Sometimes I say, well, do you sell a green product or are you a green company? And most of them, they sell a green product. A lot of them are getting on board. So you're green from the inside out, as I like to say, because it really matters.
Yeah, we have people. It really shows too when we do job interviews, because we have people coming to us who, you know, that's their biggest excitement is working for a company that is doing something that they believe in. And, you know, their second goal is to get a job.
Right. But that's awesome. It's a tribute.
And it's such a joy and a privilege to be able to offer that to people. You know, I really don't take it lightly, and I also don't take lightly the fact that the people who support our company by buying the fuel, you know, so many people have, once we got started back in the late 90s, actually sold their car, bought a diesel car so they could drive on biodiesel. And there was a point where back then our production was very limited. So the only way we could keep those people fueled, and I felt very responsible because people were buying vehicles just to run on this fuel that was locally made. So we had two choices. We could either raise the price so that we kept the demand low, or we could limit our customers at the time. And so what we did was we limited the customers. We created a B100 club, and we limited it to however many customers could, you know, the fuel supply could supply, so
right.
that people would, when they came to the pump, we wouldn't run out and have people that couldn't get the fuel.
Oh my gosh.
Now we're happily beyond that, because we're making enough fuel for anybody who wants to come to the pump. But it was a very good learning experience for how to do business differently from a normal petroleum fuel company, just creating our own business model for what works for our customers, for our employees, for ourselves, for our mission, and for our goals.
Well, and the most wonderful thing to me is not only are you getting the national and international recognition, you're growing. And it's very,
right.
very healthy in these challenging economic times to be looking at a growth process instead of, you know, cutting back. So let me just ask you this. What do you see? I think this is a huge question. We could probably go to the next break on this one, but I know there are obstacles is to wider scale development and the creation of more biodiesel plants and the infrastructures. What are some of the biggest obstacles that you see in your leadership roles for the creation of more, I would say, infrastructure, which you just spoke about, where you can go mm-hmm. and fill your gas tank up.
Right. Well, the potential for this model to be rolled out across the country is huge, and I would say our largest challenge to that is because it does require support from our local, state, and federal governments. We are competing against this massive petroleum industry. At least on price, and they've been receiving huge subsidies for decades.
Huge,
so, you know,
huge.
Know, trying to get, you know, one of the biggest frustrations is that the incentives and subsidies that have come along for biodiesel have not been consistent. They have expired. The major one is called the FET credit, the Federal Excise Tax Credit, which is $1 per gallon, and that has expired twice. The first time it expired for a year before they reinstated it, about half our industry went bankrupt. And so then they reinstated it, and it expired again at the end of last year. So we're expecting to see a lot of companies struggling or possibly even folding again this year. But one of the issues in our industry is what I call phantom competition. And phantom competition, I think it rears its ugly head at the state level most of all. You know, when I've spent a lot of time at our state legislature trying to get support from our state for this, you know, to grow this model throughout the state. And what comes along are these other entities that say, well, you know, that's old. We're going to develop this algae model, and we're going to have 75,000 gallons an acre. You know, and these kinds of promises have been coming along throughout the history of renewable energy, and they divert attention away from what we could be doing right now, what's real, and where we know we could get faster if we had that full support and it wasn't diverted. There's an energy writer named David Rapier who wrote on the failure of Range Fuels. Range Fuels had gotten some large government USDA loan guarantees, and it didn't fulfill the promises.
And explain what Range Fuels are.
Range Fuels is a company.
Oh, okay.
It was
okay.
A company that was supported by the federal government because they were making some big promises about where they were going to get with biofuels. And so the writer says, you know, this situation was largely avoidable. The decision to continue funding Range potentially drained funding away from others who were perhaps more deserving on the technical merits but less vocal. We cannot afford to have our energy policy hijacked by those who make the boldest claims. And so we're seeing a lot of that right now. We're seeing a lot of very bold claims that are yet to be proven, but they're diverting grant money, equity funding, government support away from those things
like
that are real and happening.
They'll turn to fuel carpetbaggers, seriously, and it's how can I make a buck many times.
Right.
And, you know, when you talk about it, it's like you not only have the major hundreds of billions of dollars, and I'm sure historically it's hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies, then those companies have the money for the lobbyists. So you've
right.
got a double whammy. You've got the 500-pound
right.
gorilla in one room and the 5,000-ton gorilla in the other room fighting this kind of thing because they have to be scared stiff because it works.
Right. And I think it's it's not unrealistic to hope that our federal officials might see this, you know, as a grassroots movement that works. I mean, President Obama was elected through grassroots movements
right.
in the last
right.
election, so
right.
they're very effective. And what often happens is that the federal government looks at models like this and says, well, that's not a very significant displacement. That is not large enough scale. And they keep and there's a big conversation about getting to scale. Well, each one might not be to scale, but if you have hundreds of these models across the country, we're not only solving the fuel issues and the renewable fuel issues and the emission issues, we're solving a lot of economy issues because we're providing jobs across the country in each of these communities. We've got the revenue staying in the communities. I mean, for us, we look at statewide, every dollar of revenue we bring in, 90 cents of that dollar stays in the
right.
state of Hawaii.
Right.
And it's the opposite model for petroleum. We're exporting billions of dollars out of the state because we import so much petroleum.
And it's just it's all has to be imported. I mean, it's so significant there. But even in our state, what state produces all the oil they use for their cars? Not any. You know, Texas
right.
maybe, but it's such a, to me, it's an economically viable model that's so significant in terms of cost reduction and ultimately, immediately, pollution reduction, just for the
right.
transportation piece alone, not to mention the gas that you're using for in your car. So other than the big P political interference with big money and big lobbying, tell us about some of the successes, because you have forged ahead. It's not just in Hawaii. I'd love to talk about the Big Island biodiesel celebration that's happening on Monday, but you've expanded to Oregon and Texas, and I'd love to hear the story about Japan, because wasn't that early in your...
That was early. That is not actually our plant. We built it for a gentleman in
okay.
Japan who
okay.
found out about our Maui plant and came to us and said, you know, I want to build this in Japan. And his goal was to, and it was built before, right before the Olympics in 1998.
Okay.
And so he wanted to run some of the Olympic vehicles on biodiesel. We had to run very, very low blends because it was freezing cold. It was the Winter Olympics, and we, you know, it was the only Olympics my husband and I ever attended, and it was pretty cold.
But that had to be an exciting day for you to have just started. If you started in 96 and then some man from Japan wants you to come and help build a plant, I would say that's like me getting a phone call from Oprah asking me if I want to be on the show because she's heard about Mrs. Green's World.
Yeah, I mean, it was. And a very prominent businessman over there who was on the IOC, he was on the International Olympic Committee. And it also, I think just doing business so early with someone from another country that has different ideas really also helped shape what we were doing and some of our values. I mean, one of the key things that stands out about that building that contract with Mr. Yoshida in Japan was my husband had an amount of money in there for insurance, for liabilities and things like that.
And
he was questioning, well, what is this? And Bob explained why that was in there, because in case something happens, you have to have this money to defend yourself and, the legal issues. And we were told, this is Japan. We're not a litigious country. We take responsibility for ourselves. And we don't need this. So we took it out. We never had a problem with it.
Right. Oh, my
but,
goodness.
When you think about the way that we do business in America and how we are always, we spend so much money on things like protection and contingencies and, all these issues that very often are real issues because people over here will sue, I remember one time hearing about a lawsuit where a guy was suing a shoe store because they didn't have something on the package about keeping your shoes tied, so he tripped on his shoelace.
It never ceases to amaze me. Right.
Yeah, and that's, that struck me as something that we have to do something about in this country as well. We've got to build models like this where we're working together, where we're helping each other, where everybody's making a living together instead of one entity making a killing.
And another great example is healthcare. I mean, look at what we've done to that because of the possibility of suing for malpractice. And it is all part of creating that caring community that works together. And I have a friend that's working on an alternative healthcare model for the United States, and her attorneys are saying you better be really, really careful because this could work and they're going to come after you. So it's like, isn't that great? Welcome to the United States. It's a great idea.
Right, exactly.
And there's going to be an obstacle called healthcare companies. So back to biodiesel, the corporate culture. Talk about the Big Island biodiesel grand opening. Another great accomplishment.
Oh, okay. It is. I mean, that's our greatest technology accomplishment to date. And this one has all the components we need to, it'll be the first commercial processing of trap grease into high quality biodiesel. And so we're very excited about that. It also will address issues with some of the other feedstocks that are being grown on the Big Island. Right now, we have the first biofuel crop in the state of Hawaii, first and only so far, that's commercial size, and it's small, but it's growing, is within a mile or two of the biodiesel plant, and they're growing jatropha, which is a tree, an oilseed tree. Jatropha was touted as the great biodiesel crop, and there's since then a lot of people have backed off on it, but we're still learning about it. But the thing that we found out about jatropha in testing it through an early EPA grant project that we did was it's very high in sulfur. And so the new technology that we've got at the biodiesel plant will take care of those sulfur issues. Biodiesel has to be less than 15 parts per million sulfur, and our biodiesel is less than 5 parts per million. So the new technology is, we've tested a lot of new feedstocks on it that we're going to be able to use that folks around here in the state of Hawaii are excited to grow. So that, and to me, being able to build something that incentivizes farmers and then being able to build relationships with local farmers is kind of the ultimate of where we want to get to. Because we've had, usually when you get to the point where we're at, we have people approach us with big money and they say, you should be looking for someone to put $100 million into this, and then you should just start growing all your own crops and have your own fuel stations. And our goal is to is to not necessarily own everything ourselves, but to create these great networks where we're collaborating with farmers, we're collaborating with the fuel distributors, we're building jobs in other industries, building new businesses. And a great example of a new business that started within the first decade of us being in business in Hawaii is the BioBeetle Company. You know, a gentleman who was running Maui Recycling Services started running all his vehicles on biodiesel, and then he just decided to create this rental car company on Maui. All the cars run on biodiesel. I think he's got one electric car now. You can actually come to Maui and you can rent a car, a biodiesel car, and drive on.
That is so great for me to know. And in a sense, we have to take another quick break. We are talking with Kelly King, the Vice President of Pacific Biodiesel. Please stay here with me. We're going to talk about Bio Willie and how Willie Nelson got involved.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Mrs. Green here. Have you seen the new 2012 VW Beetle? Well, I have, and it's adorable. The good news is that between now and June 30th, you can check one out at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street. They're offering a special lease option with $19.99 down and a payment of only $179 a month with a 39-month lease. For the best ownership experience possible and a great new car, be sure to check them out and tell them Mrs. Green sent you.
What if you had simple and easy solutions to live, work, and play green? Green Living Magazine, the premier green lifestyle magazine, brings you the latest in organic cooking, gardening, health and wellness, chef and celebrity interviews, as well as easy solutions to clean up your everyday life. Visit greenlivingaz.com for the latest in green news. Buy your subscription and view our network videos. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, and again at greenlivingaz.com.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and I invite you to think about that. Please don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Then you can hear about all these great announcements for the wonderful guests that I get to interview and learn so much. Kelly King is our guest today. She's the Vice President of Pacific Biodiesel, and they are a leading pioneer and advocate for the establishment of community-based biodiesel. We have been learning so much about it. Their website is biodiesel.com. It is an informative, very, very content-rich website and an impressive history of the company. And Kelly, I'd like to go back to the BioBeetle, where we left off, and then talk a little bit about, it's going to be kind of fun to talk about Bio Willie brand and how Willie Nelson got involved, because those kind of things help. It helps raise the profile.
Right.
I mean, it really does.
Right.
So tell me about the BioBeetle. We had a rush. I always see the clock ticking and we have to go to break. So the BioBeetle, this man, actually, it's an offshoot of the company, and you can rent a Beetle, like a little Beetle VW car.
I'm kind of actually proud that it's not really quite an offshoot. It's a separate, totally separate company. A gentleman who believes in biodiesel and drove on it for years and just created a rental car company on Maui that is wholly owned separately. You know, we are
right,
symbiotic,
right?
Because he fuels up at our, he has his customers fuel up at our pump. But I like the fact that we can generate interest that helps other people create their own small businesses and create, you know, these kinds of ideas in a world where we need to move in this direction.
Critically and quickly is what I say. It's like people, it's part of the purpose of my show. You really need to wake up about what's going on, and we don't need to be depressed, but we need to hurry. That's what I say to people.
Right.
People, we've got to really accelerate the process because the greenhouse gas emission story is not a very happy one at this point. So tell us about how did you first connect? I know that when we were there and I met with Rob Parsons, he did bring up that Willie Nelson and his wife have been very much involved. So how, mm-hmm. talk about the evolution of that.
Okay, well, it was actually Annie, his wife, who we've become very good friends in the past years, but she read about us in one of the local papers on Maui and actually found our company, and she went out and bought I believe it was a Jetta wagon, TDI.
Okay.
And started running it on biodiesel. And I remember her telling me when she first told Willie that she was going to do this, and, you know, he said, "What, have you been into my stash?"
So I love it.
He had to observe her driving on our fuel for about 5 or 6 months before he said, "Hey, that's working pretty good." So he went out and got him himself. He ordered
a
diesel Mercedes, and when he picked it up, I was there that day when he told him, "Don't put any fuel in it, you know, just a gallon or so." And he picked it up at the dock. He came straight over to our fuel pump station and filled it up with biodiesel, and that's all he's driven on since. And that was back in 2004, I believe. So they've got quite a history. From there, you know, being good biodiesel customers, they got into the biodiesel industry, and they were helping the people in the industry promote biodiesel. And then they talked us into going down to Texas and building a biodiesel plant right next to Willie's truck stop. So that was a partnership with Willie and several of his friends. And then he actually became a partner in the Oregon plant as well.
Okay.
They have a very small, I created an entity, an investment entity for Big Island Biodiesel because I personally wanted to show support. So I created an investment LLC called Peace Fuel Solutions, which Willie and Annie are part of as well.
Okay. And is that anywhere on the website?
Peace Fuel?
Yeah.
No, it's just a holding company, basically.
Okay.
But the interesting
okay.
thing about that is I came up with this name, which I thought was so clever. And then I was listening to Willie's CD maybe a couple months later, and I realized that he had written this song called Peaceful Solution.
So it was meant to be.
I don't know if it was in the back of my mind
or if
somehow that was just coincidental, but, you know, they've been very extremely supportive for all the right reasons. They're in it for the environmental component, in it for the economic component of what it brings to communities, and for the social component. So it's just been a real pleasure to be associated with them because...
You know, it is a green trifecta. I don't mean to interrupt, but when you say those three mm-hmm. things and the triple bottom line, it makes sense from all of those important aspects as
right.
well. So go ahead. I just... It makes
well, you
so
know,
much
that
sense
kind of
to
support
me.
Is so critical, I think, even in the early years, because especially in the early years, because, you know, there is struggle when you create a new company anyway. And when you create a new company, it's doing something totally different than anybody had ever seen before. I mean, we've got a lot of trying to explain biodiesel to people. And, you know, I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard bio what? But, you know, in the first couple of years, one of our very early adopters was Woody Harrelson. And, you know, very quietly, he just got involved and started fueling his, got a diesel car and he and his wife, Laura, started fueling their diesel vehicles. And I remember before I actually started working in the office at Pacific Biodiesel, my husband coming home and saying, well, an environmental attorney came in today and, wanted to know if we needed any help. And our other company, King Diesel, was kind of housing Pacific Biodiesel. We had
right.
one little desk in the corner, and So Bob was saying, well, you know, Pacific Biodiesel is really struggling. We don't really have any money, and we wouldn't be able to put an attorney on retainer or pay somebody. He said, no, I'm already paid for. Woody Harrelson sent me in here to see if there's anything you guys needed help with.
Oh, my gosh. That's so...
And that, yes. Having that someone like that, who right. at the time we didn't even know him, there were at least three times in the next 2 years after that where... you know, it was just so difficult pushing this big boulder up this hill, and, you know, that Bob talked about selling out and, you know, maybe just focusing on the other company, because the new company was starting to drain, you know, our existing company, which was
right.
doing well.
Right.
And I kept coming back to, you know, you have, when you have people like, you know, like Woody Harrelson, who you know, has way more better things to do than
right,
to
right.
you know, send his attorney in, and it's that important to him that he tries to help us. Then you have to understand it's a bigger thing than just about what's working for us now and, you know, here and now. We have to look at what this means to other people in the community.
And I just it just comes up again for me, like when I was looking at your website, what you're doing on our behalf, it's really incredible because it matters to all of us. Even to me in Tucson, Arizona, you're working on our behalf because we all breathe the same air. So thank God that you pushed him to go and keep doing that. Now, what about I think it's important to mention, I always like to know how companies like yours that are such early adopters and leaders in the field in the R&D area and all of that, how did you come up with the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, and what's going on with that at this point? It's a nonprofit, correct?
Right, it's a nonprofit, 501c3, and it was an idea that had been gelling for a couple of years, and I'd been talking to Annie about it and Daryl Hannah, who is a big biodiesel advocate, about you know, it was during those around the years between 2005 and 2007. And there were things happening in the industry that we didn't like, in the biodiesel industry. One of them was the federal tax credit that was created under the American Jobs Act was being misused and abused by some of the companies in America it had been turned into a blending credit. So you had to take a gallon of biodiesel and blend it with a little bit of diesel. Could be 0.001%. in order to get this credit, and you know, it was a credit that started out to be a production credit, and somehow the petroleum industry got involved in it, and it turned into this blender's credit. But what was happening at the time was there were companies that were importing biodiesel, from someplace like Indonesia, splashing it with a little bit of diesel fuel, and picking up the dollar per gallon credit, and then sending it to Europe and reselling it and getting credits over there. So
oh my gosh,
they were double dipping. And they were this model does not create one American job.
Right.
So
right.
it was a loophole that eventually got closed by Congress. You know, to their credit, they figured it out and they closed it. But when stuff like that is happening, and there was a big campaign by the petroleum industry to discredit biofuels, and I think we've all heard the food versus fuel argument, which was actually created by the petroleum industry, that there were a lot of issues out there that were not true, that were myths, and that were PR campaigns. But there were issues out there that were true. I mean, the importation of palm oil was an issue. The destruction of the rainforest to grow palm oil plantations was an issue. And so what we felt was really important was to disseminate this information to determine fact from fiction, and to help the public, have an objective
right,
entity
right.
that would disseminate this information, you know, and give the facts as they are. You know, like you said, let people think, not tell them what to think, but here are the facts. And so that was the creation of, and I do remember talking to people in the industry who were worried about creating the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, because they said that we were at a point where biodiesel was finally becoming accepted, and now we were raising the question of good biodiesel versus bad biodiesel. My answer to that was, we're not raising those questions. Those questions are out there. We're trying to address those questions with the truth. So if you don't acknowledge what is true, what is actual damage in the industry, then people are not going to believe you about the good stuff.
I totally agree. It's the transparency that'll make people believe you. If there's something wrong, just say it and let's fix it. And people are smart enough to get that. It's like, just stop lying to me.
We do need a lot of help. We are still struggling, with funding, but we're creating a certification program so that one of the issues back then was when people would drive up to a biodiesel pump and say, well, where's this biodiesel from? What's it being made from? Did you import palm oil? Did you do, so the certification is meant like a good housekeeping seal. So that if you see this on a pump, it's already been vetted.
The seal of approval.
Right. It's focusing, it's supporting community-based sustainable biodiesel models. And there are also best practices for feedstock issues, like growing feedstock, procuring feedstock. If you're picking up used cooking oil, are you driving your vehicles on biodiesel to do that? Things like that.
Right, right. The closed loop. That's right. The whole connection.
Right, closing the loop and letting people know that if there's a rating, if there's a sustainable biodiesel rating, then you can relax and you can trust that this fuel is being made sustainably, because with that word has been just subverted by so many different companies. The word sustainable, the word eco-friendly, the word green, all these things are issues that that people cannot just see. You can't see that word and just believe anymore that everything's okay when you see that word on a product.
And the thing is, you can go to the internet and learn so much. It's my best friend. I mean, I couldn't do the show without being able to Google things and find reports and get more solid factual information. So you have to be vigilant. And I love my tagline: we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Because
I love that
too.
Do
think it's great. Now we have about
Okay, Lisa, maybe we'll give
a
plug real quickly for the Sustainable Biodiesel Lens, because you can go to our website is www.fuelresponsibly.org. And Willie Nelson has been the biggest champion of this organization, I have to say, because when he lends his name to something, he wants it to mean something. So he has lent his name to biodiesel in a big way, and he wants it to be he wants it to be the good thing that he meant it to be when he got involved.
Right. So he's going to be involved in the keeping of the standards. So it's just a great, great, great story. And we only have about 4 minutes left, which I told you the time would fly. I would love to know, based on what you're doing and the research that I'm sure that you continue to do, I always like to end the show on the guests that are like you, that are such visionaries, early adopters. What do you see in the crystal ball in terms of facilitating change more rapidly in this area? I have been doing this show for almost 4 years, and actually the basis of the internet show was I started that July 1st, so our anniversary is next week. I wanted to say that. My team was reminding me, saying it's 1 year anniversary because we migrated from a terrestrial radio to internet. And I've learned so much. And to me, this closed loop concept, taking things out of the landfills, which is such a huge issue globally, not using a lot of water. What you have created is such an opportunity for our planet. What do you see that you and Bob and your team and Willie Nelson's of the world will be able to do to roll this out a little bit faster?
Well, I think this new plant is going to be key because it has all the components that we've previously only seen in huge, large, centralized refineries, but it's small enough to be supported by the community wholly, there is the potential for a community to grow and to source the feedstock locally for this size of a plant.
So it'll be a model for people to look at on a bigger scale.
Yeah, it'll be a model for people to look at. And what I see, what I'm very hopeful for is that this model can roll out across the country. And I'm working with folks who are very concerned about veterans and getting veterans jobs. And so we're talking about a potential model in Colorado that could also be a training center for veterans. We just hired a couple of veterans for the Big Island Biodiesel plant, by the way. And
that's huge. It's just another big, I feel like ringing a bell. It's like, that's huge for all of these returning vets that are literally, talk about giving your life and for your country, and then coming back to hard times.
Right, exactly. And there's just the excitement of doing something like this that, you know, you think it's, some people think it's counterintuitive for someone who's been, you know, at war to be, you know, to be touting our bumper sticker that says no war required. but really, these are the folks that know war is hell, and they don't want to go back, and they don't want to see anybody else go.
They don't want to see anybody else go. What a great note on which to end. And thank you, Kelly King, and to your husband and your wonderful team, and to Willie and all of those people out there that are doing great things. It was wonderful. And please join me here next week for our first anniversary. We'll be interviewing Dave Johnson from the Rainbird Corporation about water sense. Thanks, Kelly, so much.
All right,
it was
thank
really
you.
A great show, and thank you for what you're doing.